Welcome to the Unbiased Fanboys Podcast. I'm Adam.
I'm Thomas.
And we love to talk tech and all things Google.
Yeah, and not only Google, we want to give you our unbiased points of views on all things tech-related, from computers and phones to smart home tech. In this podcast, we hope to be able to share our passion for all our favorite things in tech with you.
But we won't shy away from bringing you the unbiased truth. If we hate something, you'll be the first to know. You can find us on all your favorite podcast platforms, as well as social media, at The Fanboy Pod. Our website is unbiasedfanboys.com. Now let's get into the show. Welcome to the Unbiased Fanboys Podcast. I am one of your many hosts, Adam, and I'm joined today with my esteemed colleague, very professional, knows his shit. We are lucky to have him on the show, Mr. Tommy Martin.
Go ahead. Yeah, a round of applause, please.
You've probably seen by the title of the show, of this episode, it's a Dear Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to talk about everything that we talked about last episode for Google, the pros, the cons, why we love it, why we hate it. And we're going to do the same thing for Apple, although it's going to be very minimal in terms of what we love about it.
It'll be more on the side of negatives because both of us tend towards, you know, not recommending Apple. But we do want to give it their fair, you know, go at things because they do offer a lot. And me in particular, I'm going to try to play devil's advocate here. You know, I'm going to try to like really, really look at what's good about them because they do have some things that's going for them. And depending on what your priorities are and what you buy, they're arguably a very good choice. So we'll start off on the positive. We'll start off with the things that they do quite well. And one of the things that's easy to start off with, that's easy to see in any of their products, is just build quality, you know, their attention to detail. You'll never see anything coming out of Apple that's poorly put together. Or, well, I guess I shouldn't say that, you know, as an ultimate, like, conclusion. But most of the stuff that they make, you know, it's built well. You know, their MacBooks are milled out of solid aluminum. You know, they've got that, well, quite a common thing now, but just the glass metal sandwiches for their phones. And they're really quick to implement, you know, custom solutions for things. We've seen that with the Mac Pro and some other stuff. They make their own custom hardware, silicon for their phones. So, you know, they're quick to, if they can't find an off-the-shelf part that meets their requirements, they have no hesitations to make custom stuff. And, you know, all of that build quality and attention to detail goes a long way towards making them feel like good products.
Not only that, but they've also, I believe on one of the more recent iPhones, they actually use, what was it, Samsung screens?
Oh, yeah, they do that. They don't hesitate to use off-the-shelf parts if they can get them. And, you know, there's no denying that Samsung makes the best mobile screens you can get. So
there's no denying that. You're absolutely right. The other thing is, like, the design of the MacBook Pro I'm just going to use my experience. The MacBook Pro. I used it at my most recent job.
Yep.
Fucking hated it, but loved the design. It was sleek.
Yep.
The laptop did have some things that I'm still trying to use on my Windows PC right now that it doesn't have. And so that's a little bit challenging, but I did not enjoy it. But regardless, we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
Like, the hardware just looked sleek.
Yes,
right?
It does.
It looked very 2020.
And they're very, you know, cohesive with how they implement that. You know, a lot of laptop lines, for example, anything from Dell or HP or something like that, you know, every couple of years they come out with a new flagship device and it looks completely different from anything they made before. You know, they can never really settle on a design, you know, aesthetic that they like. And Mac has never had that problem. Apple's never had that problem. You know, they've got that cohesive, almost timeless look to their devices that a lot of companies end up kind of emulating. You see that with a lot of smartphones now taking the same glass and metal approach that Apple has. You see a lot of computer manufacturers now just making those metal slabs because that's become kind of the de facto go-to design for stuff, mostly because of Apple. You know, they're the ones who at least popularized it.
Well, that's also what sets them apart is their luxury status.
Yeah.
Not every single product that they have is a luxury item, such as an iPad or your typical, maybe your iPhone SE,
sure,
or even your regular base model iPhone.
Yep.
You still have that luxury brand. And we'll kind of talk a little bit about that later in their cons.
Mm.
They are a luxury brand in terms of tech.
And they don't shy away from that at all. They want you to know that. And that's one of the things that they try to, you know, get you to buy into. That's one of the bits that make up that kind of intangible aspect of their pricing for their products, which again, we'll get into pricing later. There's that chunk of pricing above what the actual hardware is worth. And a lot of what you're getting there is that luxury status, that brand recognition, you know, that shiny Apple on the back of your device.
So as someone that does a lot of graphic design work, video editing, digital media marketing, I should say, the industry standard is a MacBook or a or essentially just an iMac or an iMac Pro, right?
Yep.
And the reason for that is because historically speaking, Windows has been the far inferior product because it can't handle having, let's say, Premiere Pro open, After Effects open, or even InDesign open all at the same time.
Yep.
With my MacBook Pro that I was using in my last job, I was running After Effects, Premiere Pro, Photoshop, Illustrator, and InDesign, and Acrobat, and it was fine.
Yeah, yeah.
On my Lenovo that I bought in 2016, it's a Lenovo Yoga 14, I paid $1,200 for this fucking thing, and it cannot handle Photoshop and Illustrator open at the same time.
Yeah.
We do see a lot of current trends with Windows kind of moving in the direction where it can support all those devices at the, or those apps at the same time.
Yep.
But that's a slow trend.
Yeah, and that's actually an aspect of it I hadn't, you know, fully thought of, was the historical element to it, that it's even if it's less true nowadays than it used to be, that historically, you know, Windows was the operating system that accountants used and that, you know, people used at their boring desk jobs, and then Apple is the computer that people used when they got home and wanted to have fun. Slowly that transitioned also into, you know, creative softwares, you know, like you were talking about with graphics design. And even for coding, you know, Macs are not uncommon to see in the room, where they're actually very common because of its basis on the Unix kind of foundation. So yeah, they've had that advantage. And Windows definitely is progressing there. But Windows has the same problem that, well, Google has had with Android, with the fragmentation issue. You know, they have to create an operating system that can run on dozens of CPUs with any wide amount of RAM, any amount of storage, you know, any type of screen resolution. And that's made it very difficult for them to create a really high performance, lightweight operating system. And they're getting closer to that every day. But, you know, my wife has a Surface Book, and she uses that for the same stuff, graphics design and that type of thing. And she runs into performance issues all the time. Stuff that you just little hiccups, little bugs and gaps that you wouldn't see in the Mac operating system.
It's definitely unfortunate in that area, but at the same time, I mean, she has the Pro Surface 4, right?
She has a Surface Book, actually.
Okay, so either way, it's still an overpriced item.
Absolutely, yeah. Price range, it's exactly on par with Apple. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I guess it's maybe like their push for a luxury.
Yeah, yeah.
Alternative to Apple.
It's the all metal, you know, same kind of slab design. It's got, you know, the tablet functionality, which is nice. It's actually weird that Apple has become so ubiquitous with graphics design, given that they only have one product currently that actually has pen input. It's really odd. But, you know, they've managed to do that nonetheless, and all credit to them. You know, they've managed to corner a market and corner it really well. And that's something that they've got going for them right now.
Apple does have a lot going for them in terms of software, because they have a lot of products like Logic and Final Cut, as well as GarageBand. A lot of people use that. And so you guys might not know this, but I also run another podcast that I'm not going to talk about here. A lot of our colleagues in that field of our topic use either Audacity or GarageBand. And GarageBand is really the more popular one because a lot of people are using Macs.
Yep.
It's unfortunate. Yep. But regardless.
And I definitely see the appeal for some of that, because it's not even necessarily pro stuff. You know, if you're recording music, you might want Logic Pro. If you're, you know, editing videos for your profession, you might want Final Cut Pro. You know, for example, you know, Marquez from MKBHD uses Apple exclusively for his editing, even though he loves Android. He's a big Google person. He's always been Mac for computers.
You remember when him and Sarah Deechi did a comparison, because she was using Adobe Premiere and he was using Final Cut, and he exported his video a lot faster than she did.
Yeah, yeah.
As someone that's used both, I will say I prefer Adobe in that software, although they're both shitty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've never heard great things about either, but, you know, they're the only options you've got. And even, you know, the beefiest of PCs that are running on overclocked hardware and great GPUs are still going to struggle to match the rendering performance of a MacBook Pro. It's really impressive the performance optimization that they've been able to do. And that comes down just to their locked in operating system. They're the only ones that control it, and they can pick what hardware runs.
Well, not just rendering speed, but also battery life. I mean, my PC, my laptop that I'm currently using to record this, it's a 2016 model, but I get probably, you know, three-ish hours of battery life.
Yep.
I was using my MacBook Pro from work, and when I would bring my laptop home every night, I wouldn't have to bring the charger home, but I would out of habit.
Yeah.
From being a PC guy.
Yep. Oh yeah. And that's something that that's one of those other things that's the gap is getting smaller and smaller in recent years. The Surface devices have always been pretty good about battery life. I had one of the first gen Surface books that I used in college, and I could go through, you know, 3-4 hour plus long classes of taking notes and never have a problem. But if you want cheaper, you know, you're going to lose out on that. And the Surface Book is something that's priced right up there with the MacBook Pro. So it's definitely, it's something that Apple's been able to do well, partly just because of their price point, but also, again, that software optimization they're able to work through.
Apple is really good at pushing the bar. We've seen that with the headphone jack and a lot of other things. They're really good at taking new tech and making it better. Like we've seen the Touch ID. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's definitely one of the most fastest and reliable. However, there's still a lot going, you know, even like Face ID. Yeah. A lot of people think Apple were the first one to come out with that. You're wrong. No.
Yeah.
But they did perfect it a lot better than what Google did.
Yeah. And that's a very important distinction to make. You know, Apple likes to talk about themselves as being this innovative company, but it's been a long time since they've really pioneered something, at least, you know, on a fundamental categorical level. They've pioneered stuff like removing the headphone jack. But it's been a very long time, you know, maybe back in the iPod days or maybe the first iPhone, you know, it was one of the last things that they introduced. It was truly innovative and it truly changed a category. But like you said, they are really good at taking something that already exists and making it better. You know, they did that with smartwatches. There was a lot of really buggy, kind of crappy Android smartwatches out there.
And it's still like that.
Yeah, it's still like that. Even current versions of Wear OS are really buggy, really slow. The Tizen operating system that Samsung is pushing is not got the app support. It's really never taken off hugely. You know, they've done that with AirPods. You know, wireless earbuds existed before, but they used to have a cable between them. They were really clunky or didn't sound good or had bad battery life. And AirPods set a new standard for that.
The funny thing is, if Kelly, soon to be wife in less than 2 weeks, thankfully, if she sees someone wearing those AirPods, she thinks they look so douchey.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is like, Apple has perfected the smartwatch. I mean, they easily have one of the best ones out there, which absolutely. Is hard, very hard, hard for me to say.
Now, oh, I believe it.
With the AirPods, as a fanboy of Google, I have to give it to Apple, at least on the first gen, second gen.
Yeah.
Just the first gen. But the second gen, you know, I haven't fully got my hands on yet, but I will say that I do think so far that they are a challenger to the AirPods and even the AirPods Pro.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily in all the sound quality, but all the features that come with the Google Assistant.
Yeah. I absolutely think the Pixel Buds are probably the best you can buy right now, Android or iOS, for entry-level earbuds. They definitely knocked down the original AirPods and the second-gen AirPods. The AirPods Pro are probably still a tier above just because they've got that sound cancellation. Which is really nice. And there's some other Sony ones or Bose ones that do the same. But I've heard really good things about the AirPods Pro. And just the fact that Linus from Linus Tech Tips uses them as an Android and PC guy, he daily drives the AirPods Pro. You know, it's a testament to what they've been able to do there.
That did really upset me as a Google fanboy. Google on these new Pixel Buds did not include noise cancellation.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I was really hoping for that.
Because like when I listen to music, I listen to music. I don't want to hear anything outside.
Exactly.
I do that to escape everything.
Yep.
I don't give a fuck if I'm crossing the road and I have to hear a car honk. I'm looking both ways before I fucking cross the road.
Right. It's really a shame that they didn't add that. It would have made the Pixel Buds hands down my go-to choice. But, you know, they're also priced quite a bit lower. For only $150, they're pretty compelling. They are $150, right? Or they $180?
180.
Okay. Well, even still, the AirPods Pro are what, like 240, 250?
I think they're a little more expensive than that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's a solid price difference. And I think for that price difference, you can probably forgive it if you don't consider sound cancellation to be a really important feature. It's one of those things that, you know, Apple's been able to really optimize and improve. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them continue to do that into the future with newer types of tech that we're just starting to see. In Android devices, you know, things like underscreen fingerprint readers. I wouldn't be surprised at all if maybe in the next one or the one after that, Apple introduces their own version of it and it'll be better. It'll be faster. It'll probably be the whole screen, not just one little spot. And it'll be great. But they're going to wait until the technology is mature before they jump in and start implementing it.
Well, that's the thing. They weren't the first to put a high refresh rate screen on a tablet.
Mm-mm.
But they were the first to do it in a really high quality premium sort of way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. High refresh rate screens have been around for forever. And everyone, you know, talked big about it when Apple put it in their iPad Pro. It's really a cool feature. If you've ever used an iPad Pro, it's really clean to use. It's a very compelling device. But yeah, part of that is because they waited until they had a high enough quality screen that had that refresh rate that they could use. And they waited until they had an operating system that was able to have animation speeds and processor speeds that could keep up with it. Because one of the risks that you have with a high refresh rate screen is that it can kind of show off how slow your hardware is. If you don't have the processing power to keep up with that higher refresh rate, then it's just going to make it look worse. And so again, they do what Apple does. They waited a few years. They waited till it was more mature. They waited till they had a lower risk approach to it. And that's when they started putting it in.
They're just not really true innovators right now. You know, they're waiting, like you're saying, for everyone else to do it. Yep. And then they come in and do their best to perfect it.
Yep.
They don't always succeed.
Right.
Like Siri.
Yep.
But Siri was the top of the line for a couple of years.
You see that a lot with their software more is, you know, they came in with Siri and it was good for a while, but it quickly got surpassed by Google Assistant and even, you know, Alexa at this point.
Yeah.
The same with Apple Maps. You know, they tried to come in with this innovative, well, they probably call it innovative, but, you know, this just competitor to Google Maps, and it fell flat on its face.
Anytime Apple comes out with something, they are the first to do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Even though they're not.
Well, no one else has done it before because no one else has, you know, called it what they called it, or they mix in some little twist that makes it different from anything that's been done before. I think they did that with their noise cancellation and their AirPods Pro. They called it something really unique and they just slightly tweaked how the technology worked and then they called it brand new and fresh.
Or even like AirDrop.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Cloud sharing has existed for forever, but you know, they did it well. And that's the thing, you know. As much as I hate the fact that they try to claim or they try to take all the credit for these things that they're adding, they do a good job of just doing it a little bit better. You know, almost every single time they implement something new like that, they add something that is compelling. They make it integrated into their ecosystem more cohesively than anything else. And they do a good job of, you know, introducing this quote unquote new technology in a cohesive fashion.
And that's what creates that unwavering brand loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was, I believe it was Your Average Consumer to about a year and a half ago. He said the only reason he wasn't switching full time to a Pixel was because of iMessage.
Yep. Once they've got you locked in, it's really hard to break out of it.
And it's like that for any ecosystem. But
yeah. But Apple makes it maybe a bit harder than they have to.
And they kind of make it a little bit more douchier too. And I say it because, you know, if you're an Android in a group chat, you're known as the green person.
Yeah, yeah. It is. There's a lot of peer pressure elements to it where they try to get you to buy into their stuff just because they go out of their way to make sure that you can't use their product without their hardware. We see that with things like FaceTime, right? I mean, FaceTime was not the first type of video chat. They implemented it in a very good way, but you can't get a FaceTime app for Android. So all your friends have iPhones and they want to start a FaceTime call, then you're out of luck. Or they all have to be the ones that, you know, download Skype or Duo or something like that so that, you know, they can accommodate you. And it's just that peer pressure element that you don't want to be that one person that makes everyone have to download something different. Or you don't want to be that one person who's the green bubble in the group chat.
I mean, to their credit, they have some sort of innovation. And I know I said earlier they weren't really innovating right now, but, you know, in terms of the headphone jack,
yeah,
they were probably the only company that could really just say, deal with it.
Exactly. Yeah. And,
you know, even like the USB-C, they're probably the first ones to put that on a laptop.
Yeah. So they were definitely one of the first companies to exclusively put USB-C ports on a laptop. And they did that with one of their MacBooks a few years back. Where they just said, you get your one USB-C port, or on your MacBook Pro, you get three or four of them. And that's the only type of port you get. You get no SD card slot. You get no special charger port. You get no original USB ports. You get no HDMI jacks. It's nothing. You got a USB-C port. And they're one of the few companies that, you know, has that level of brand loyalty and that level of cult following that they can just do that. And everyone will not only, you know, fall in line and say, okay, yeah, that's fine.
But they'll go out and buy all those goddamn dongles.
Yeah, they brought on the dongle apocalypse with that. There's a silver lining to that, right? Because that's both a bad thing in the sense that we've got all these dongles now. Same with the headphone jack. Same with their decision on that. You know, we've got all these adapters now, or you have to go buy expensive AirPods or something, right? But the silver lining to all of that is that we've gotten to see actual tangible progress in these fields. You know, we've started to see peripheral makers, people who make mice and keyboards, people who make, you know, USB hubs and power ports and everything. You know, they've been able to adapt to this, you know, and they've been able to say, okay, we're going to make better wireless earbuds because the headphone jack is gone, and we're going to make better USB-C thumb drives and better USB-C mics and better USB-C little ports and docks and stuff, because that's what Apple decided to do. And no other company could do that.
Well, they're really pushing towards a wireless environment.
Yeah.
I don't think you would be surprised to see them without ports on a phone.
Yeah.
You know, really push that wireless charging, the headphone, wireless headphones and all of that bullshit that we need to be using anyway.
Sure. Yeah. And there, you could argue that this is their bigger picture push to the future, you know, that they're being these, you know, bad guys in the short term by forcing the hand of the technology industry and creating these changes that didn't need to happen and that no one else was taking the initiative to do. And they finally said, you know what? No, we're fed up with it. You know, we don't need to have headphone jacks. Wireless technology is good enough. We don't need to have anything other than USB-C ports. USB-C is the future. You know, and I've heard rumors that they're working towards, you know, a few years from now, maybe next year, probably not, but, you know, a few phones from now, having a fully portless phone, a fully wireless phone where there is no cables. You know, it's only wireless charging, only wireless audio, only wireless data transfer. And in theory, you know, there's no reason why that shouldn't be a problem. And there's no reason why that shouldn't be the future. It's just a question of whether or not Apple is doing the right thing by forcing the hand on that now.
Right. The other thing that they do well that we've talked about in our previous episode is they have your data, but they don't need to do a goddamn thing with it in terms of advertising purposes.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. They've shown actually a really good precedent in the past of standing for the security of the data of their users, because they do collect some data, but they've in the past, even in high level, I think it went up to the Supreme Court. There was a case where the police was trying to get information from someone's iPhone because related to a murder case. And they denied that information. You know, they stood their ground and they said, no, we're not going to give it to you. And I think almost any other company would have folded under that. But see, Apple has no vested interest in selling their data. Like, oh, they could make more money off of it, but they're worth more than a small European country already, right? They don't need more money. To them, they have that capital that they can say, you know what? We don't make money off of selling data. We don't need to make money off of selling data. So we can be that company that stands our ground here and says, no, we're not going to. And so unlike Google, where they're going to be pushing you for your data, they want your data because that's where 75% of their income comes from, or maybe more. With Apple, they don't have that interest. And so it's a little bit of an extra security blanket, knowing that the company that is manufacturing your phone doesn't have much of an incentive to actually sell your data.
Right there is a very good place to stop and talk about why not Apple.
Mm.
And one of the things for me is, especially with phones, is that you can pay out the ass and get an Apple product.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could pay reasonably
mm-hmm.
for a phone and get just as good, if not better, hardware or software.
Yep.
You know, so it's really just not worth it.
Yeah. And that's really what you have to ask with Apple is it worth what you're paying? Because whatever type of tech it is you want to get, you know, whether it's a phone or a computer or a watch or one of their monitors or whatever it is, you just have to ask, you know, what are you willing to pay for? I should specify this as speculation on the number. I don't have data on this, but I would guess that with Apple, depending on the product you're talking about, anywhere between 50% to 80% of its cost is actually justifiable, you know, from a hardware standpoint, from a manufacturing standpoint, from an R&D standpoint, you know, and the rest of that little, you know, bit on top of that, sometimes it's a really high margin. Sometimes it's slimmer with the more competitive industries. But you're with the rest of that money, you're just paying for the brand. You're paying for the luxury, which we talked about earlier. And you're paying for fitting into that ecosystem with your friends or with coworkers, which we also talked about earlier, you know, the fitting in with FaceTime calls, fitting in with being a blue bubble, even if it's something as shallow as that, or having employees able to airdrop files to you or something like that. You know, it's there's that whole level of peer pressure and brand recognition that plays into it.
Exactly. And they've set it up like that, almost in like a bully way, because they are a tech giant, but they're also trying to position themselves as a luxury brand so they can get snotty or snooty with it. You know what I'm saying? And some of their users, their customer base, are becoming that way. Like, ugh, you're the green guy. Like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, like, who gives a shit? I mean, I'm going to, like, you know, talk shit about Apple all day long.
Sure, right.
But if Tom were to go out here and buy an Apple product, I would, you know, respect him a lot less.
I'd never hear the end of it, yeah.
Right, because you have positioned yourself, at least in our friendship, to really hate Apple. And all of your reasons are very fucking valid, as are mine. Now, with that being said, if you were to go buy an Apple product, it would be like you were selling out in a way.
Hmm.
If, you know, Joe Smo was to go buy an iPhone SE or like my mother, you know, well, my mother's going to hear the end, never going to hear the end of it because she knows where I stand and she has a lot of Google products like Nest Hub, Google Lights, Google Homes, you know, so that one I don't understand because it doesn't work with the shit that she already has as well as it would because now she has to download the Google Assistant just to turn her fucking lights off, right? Unless she wanted to say Google do it.
To be fair, though, that's the key difference with Google versus Apple as ecosystems is that with Google, you can download the app on iOS. You know, if you want to use your Nest products on iOS, you can do that, right? If you want to use Google Maps on iOS, you can do that. But what Apple does is they say, you know what? If you want to use FaceTime, go and buy an iPhone. Deal with it, right? And you don't have a choice.
But even with Apple, using the Google Assistant on Apple, you have to go and then open the app.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot less elegant for sure. With Google, they're trying everything they can do to get iOS users onto their ecosystem because they're trying to steal away that user base. But with Apple, they're making no effort. You know, they're saying, you got to come to us. You got to come to us begging for our products. You got to pay top dollar for our stuff. And they know that people will do it. And it feels even a little bit manipulative the way that they've, you know, taken advantage of that and that they've said, you know, we can make decent products. We can make good products even. We can make products that are near the top of their class, but we're not going to put any effort into making you feel welcome here, right? Like you feel trapped here. This is what you have to have.
I mean, and the choices aren't always as elegant as they want you to think. And this is going to get a little bit nitpicky on my part, but I used a MacBook Pro for like the last 6 or 7 months. So I feel like I'm a little qualified. That was my daily driver at work.
Mm-hmm.
Using it for graphic design, video editing, Google Ads, a lot of different things.
Yeah.
I'm a big keyboard shortcut guy. Mm-hmm. And I was like that before I got into graphic design. And I'm going to be like that well long after I get out of graphic design.
Yep.
With that being said, on a PC, primarily control is going to be your modifier.
Right.
So if I'm in Chrome and I want to hit control T to open up a new tab, control T is fine. Control shift T will open up your last saved tab that you just close out of. The control W works the same way. It closes them. Control shift W closes all of them. Now let's say I'm in a file explorer. I can control and then click everything that I want. And if I want to unselect a file, I just control and then click on that file and it's no longer selected.
Yep.
But the remaining 37 files are.
Yep.
With Apple, it's different. You have to do, I believe it's command and then click from A to B. Well, A to, like, let's say G, right? And then if I want to unselect a file, let's say F, I have to use control to unselect that file. So a lot of it is like you're having two or three different modifier keys, like Alt and Command and Control. Whereas on PC, you're just using the one. So it's a lot easier to remember. It's a lot more intuitive. Although I will say this, though, with Apple, they do have something that I wish PCs would have, which is, when you're using the file explorer, I don't know what they call it, you can hit spacebar after you click once on a file and it will kind of give you a preview. So if it's a Word document, a PDF, you know, that's a very, very good feature to have. Does PC have it? No. But regardless, you know, that's one of the very few things I can find from an OS standpoint that I prefer over PC.
Yeah. I can't speak as much to the kind of granular details of it like that. But yeah, you know, they have this reputation of being you know, an innovative company, everything's intuitive and easy to use. Everything's as simple as it can be, right? But it doesn't always end up working out that way. And the choices that they make weren't always necessary. And your bigger picture, like we were just talking about the headphone jack, might have done some good. And I do like the trend towards wireless earbuds, but the headphone jack didn't need to leave for that to happen. Right? I mean, they could have made the AirPods and left the headphone jack in and just let people have the choice.
I guess it kind of did. And I say that because, you know, when it comes to making a point like that, sometimes you have to do it in a rude way.
Yeah, true.
But at the same time, it necessarily didn't need to leave the headphone jack off.
Right.
So, no, but like, they didn't really need to leave it off, but they did to make a statement. But from a performance and standpoint, you don't need a lack of a headphone jack to still be able to use your wireless headphone.
Right.
I mean, I had my Samsung Galaxies, and I was using my original Pixel with a headphone jack sometimes and with Bluetooth the other times.
Yep.
You know, like, there's no need for that.
Yep.
But the other thing is, like, they are really good, at taking something that could be valued between $200 to $300 and charging between $7,000 and $1,000 for it.
Yeah. That's the type of stuff they get you on. I know that you're specifically referring to the, like, the wheels and the stand, or the wheels for the new Mac Pro and the stand for their Display XDR.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that really pushes it for me. You can justify, you know, their slightly above average costs on their phones or their computers or something just based on the build quality you're getting. Or if you're in that ecosystem, that's the premium you're paying. But for, you know, $700 for computer wheels, $1,000 for a monitor stand, it's just unnecessary.
I mean, I wouldn't even call those computer wheels. I would call those computer chair wheels.
Yeah, right, right. They're just those little rollers. And I'm sure they're incredibly fancy. I'm sure they're very plush and very nice. But they're not $700. And that's an example of what we were just talking about, that manipulation. And, you know, whether it's intentional or not, I don't want to pretend that all the Apple CEOs or executives are, you know, these evil masterminds that are just, you know, puppeteering all of their fans. But
when you charge $4,000 for a monitor and then $1,000 for a stand.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have paid $100 for that fucking stand. It might be worth $150, but I'm also a cheap ass.
Right. See, there's the issue is that they know that the people who are buying $4,000 monitors and $20,000 computers are not people that are going to even flinch at spending $700 on some wheels or $1,000 on the monitors. They just say, yeah, just throw it in.
It's completely ridiculous and completely not necessary for anything.
Yeah.
That's like buying a car and then buying like a 4-car garage for it.
Yeah, you're right. It's definitely at a very high level of not being necessary. But again, you know, they can do that and they know that people are going to pay it. You know, I'm sure people like Marquez who have that kind of money and who they love those Apple products, they're going to buy that, right? And all those companies out there that are doing, well, really the Mac Pro is pretty much designed for video editing at the very low end and then, you know, 3D rendering at the very high end. Those are companies that can throw money at computers like this. And, you know, even with a $1,000 stand, that monitor is way cheaper than other reference monitors. So they know that that's a price that they can charge. And people will laugh at them. People will mock it. But people are going to buy it, too.
Well, sure. But, I mean, it's all about maintaining that luxury brand, even though some of it is goddamn ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I will say this, though. Some of their hardware, at least on the lower end, is reasonably priced. But once you start getting to the higher end, it's like, are you stupid?
Yeah, so if you look at like their MacBook Pros, you know, they're similarly priced to top of the line Windows computers, stuff like the Surface line or the XPS from Dell. You know, they're the same as, you know, top tier Windows computers for similar specs. And so they're not overpriced at all. iPhones are the same. It's such a competitive market in phones that they can't afford to make absurdly priced phones, or they can't afford for that to be their only option. But especially when you get into the Macs and the Mac Pros, you know, the ceiling on those computers is absurd. And, you know, even at the base level, some of their higher end hardware is absolutely insane. And then when you get up into spending $30,000, $40,000 on a computer, it's just, it's beyond rational.
I mean, it's completely ridiculous. I mean, not only that, but also like how much they charge people to fix things. Like for fuck's sake, even when they fucked up the battery thing. Before all that came out, it was what, like $60 to $100 for a repair? Then they were like, oh yeah, we admit we're wrong and we're only going to charge you $35 for our mistake. That really affected your phone.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the big things they get you with too, is even if with their iPhones and their computers, they don't make a lot off of you on the actual product sale, they'll get all the app store purchases and stuff, but they'll also be able to get you on stuff like accessories and like you said, repairs. You know, that's stuff that they can charge a lot for it. And I know it's only anecdotal, but my wife, for example, has had two MacBooks in the past throughout college, and both of them just would randomly die. You know, they just completely quit on her for no reason. No, nothing was spilled on them. She didn't drop it. They just stopped working. And when she took it to the store to have it fixed, it was always, you know, $800+ to fix it. They needed to take the entire motherboard out and swap out every component in it. And it was always absurd.
You know, I had a Dell that kind of just fucking crashed, man. Like, there was no bringing this bitch back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And Dell fixed it for free.
Mm.
It was an XPS, though.
Okay.
XPS 15 from 2012.
Okay.
I mean, I had that thing for 4 or 5 years. And it was great.
Yeah.
Until it drowned in whiskey.
Yeah. Well, see, that's impressive, though, because that's an accident. That's your fault. That's something that you did wrong, and they still replaced it, right?
Well, let me clarify.
Ah.
I had it for 3 years, and then it died, mm-hmm. and they had to replace it.
Oh,
or not
gotcha.
Replace it, but they repaired it.
Okay.
And then about a year and a half, 2 years after that, I was at a concert with some friends,
mm-hmm.
and they decided to put an uncorked bottle of whiskey in my backpack where my laptop was.
Oof. Yeah.
That dead, which is why I now have my Lenovo.
Yeah, that's not going to end well. But see, with a Windows computer, you know, you can, well, it depends on the computer, especially with Surfaces or even like the XPS nowadays. You know, you can't do a lot of upgrading yourself, but you know, if you had bad RAM or a bad keyboard or, you know, anything else go wrong with it, you can pull it out, swap it out, change it yourself. You know, if you could fix stuff yourself, or, you know, you could take it to a third party store that could do that super cheap. But with Apple, they're really exclusive about what type of third-party stores they let do repairs. And because everything is so custom designed and because everything is so tightly packed into their products, you know, repairs are expensive, even if they kind of have to be. You know, even if it's a cheap part that needs to replace, the amount of work that it takes to get to it and the other type of custom components you have to get through to get to it is just, it's absurd.
Well, I mean, that's just a part of it, man. That's part of the ecosystem.
Yep.
One thing that I really don't like about their ecosystem is very closed off.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, with like Google and Windows, it's a lot more easy to share stuff, you know, whether that's between, you know, the internet. For example, iPhones, you can only text from the computer if you have an Apple device.
Yep.
With Android, as long as you have a browser, you can text from a browser.
Yep.
From any fucking computer.
Yep.
You know? And it's not the same with Apple. I mean, even file sharing. I mean, it is, you can AirDrop, sure, fine and dandy. You know, with PC, we have more options. We have Drive. I mean, I guess you have that with Apple, but, you know, everything is, you just have more options with PC and Chrome OS and Linux.
Yep. It's the same with phones too. Yeah, where, you know, with Apple, if you want Mac OS, you buy Mac. Yeah, that's your option. I guess they give you MacBook Air or MacBook or MacBook Pro. Other, like, you don't have an option for a different hardware manufacturer. So if you don't like the choices that Apple's making, if you don't like the prices they're offering, if you don't like their design, if you don't like, you know, something about the way that they approach things, but you want their software, you don't have a choice.
I mean, there's no competition.
Yeah. And that's even the more fundamental problem, is that it's not even that you don't have the option. You know, no options is fine if your sole option is a good one. But with no competition, there's no reason for them to make better stuff. They have to keep up functionality-wise with Windows computers, but there's not nearly as much push for innovation as there is in Windows or with Android, you know, because with Windows or Android, all those manufacturers are competing with each other for the user base that has already decided on the operating system, but now they also get to pick what hardware they want. With Apple, you know, they don't have to do that. So it's really a bad situation for their hardware development that they don't have that competition.
It does make it a lot different because you don't have that need to better yourself.
Yep.
Because Apple is very closed off.
Yep.
They keep everything in-house so they can keep you in-house so you don't go branching off and finding the better life that is Android or PC.
Yeah. Well, and so that's probably why they've moved away from innovation. Back in the day, back when they were competing for your money, they were competing for, like, as an operating system, they were competing as an ecosystem. And they were trying to say that our Mac OS computer is better than your Windows computer. But it's become more and more about just which operating system you're in, right? And if you've already got Mac stuff, if you've already got Apple stuff, then there's no competition, right? So yeah, like you said, they have no need to push themselves. They have no need to become better because they've already got their user base.
I mean, I guess the conclusion would be is you have to sit down, look yourself in the mirror and say, am I willing to overpay for things?
Well, and not necessarily overpay. It depends on what you want to pay for, because there is a reason for every dollar on an Apple product. It's just not all rational, tangible reasons. It's their ecosystem. It's their brand. It's the luxury. You know, it's the peer pressure. All of those things are really hard to put a dollar sign value on, but that's what Apple does. You know, they say,
well, do you want pay into an ecosystem where it's very closed off, almost like, what was it, Western and Eastern Europe?
Like, yeah.
On one Germany, side, you have the US and complete freedom. On the other side, you have communism and everything is decided for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually probably more like that analogy than most will admit. Because, yeah, you've got a very closed off, monopoly driven ecosystem on one side where there is no competition. There's just, you get what you get and that's what you get. Mm-hmm. But yeah. On the other side, it's all competition. It's all who can compete for your dollar better. And if you decide that you like what Apple has, then sure, you know, there's no harm in going that route. You just have to be aware of what it is you're getting yourself into. That's really what I hope to have accomplished with this podcast, is to give you a concept of what you're buying into when you go out.
Right. And you have to ask yourself, is that worth it? And
yeah.
For me, fuck no.
Yeah.
No.
Same. Yeah. For me, the answer is no. I've tried Apple. Actually, back in the day, when I was a lot younger, back in high school, my start into tech was all Apple. I had an iPod Touch. I got one of those little iPod Nanos that had a touch screen that you could like wear on your wrist. A few years ago, I had an iPhone for about 3-4 months. So I've had my fair share of experience with Apple hardware, and every single time they've kind of driven me away. And the appeal of Android or the appeal of Windows, just the appeal of freedom. Right. I mean, I'm an American. I like my freedom, and I like the ability to switch to a different hardware manufacturer or to switch to a different, you know, set of applications if I want to, and not have to worry about that causing me to entirely shift ecosystems on, you know, what I'm using.
Well, for me, I remember back in 07, I was in the hospital and the doctor had an iPhone. It was when they first came out, and I was like, oh, and since then I wanted one.
Mm-hmm.
So 2015 comes around. And I buy one off of my professor. It was an iPhone 5.
Hmm.
And it wasn't my daily driver. I had a Galaxy S5, I believe.
Okay.
That was my daily driver.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I wanted the iPhone was so I could play this game with my roommates. And it was pre-Pokemon Go.
Oh, okay.
But it was, there's like this game that was basically like a beta version for it. I forget what it was called.
Huh.
And you went around and you tried to get different portals and stuff like that. You tried to capture them and all this other bullshit.
Okay, yeah.
And so I wanted it for that and kind of just to see it. And I could not be persuaded to go to it.
Yeah.
It didn't fit me. And the fact of the matter is, like, I was already a little far down the Google ecosystem just from using Google Drive, Gmail, and Docs and Sheets and Slides and all of that. But I tried it. I didn't like it. And that was something that I had wanted for, you know, 8 years at that time. And I finally got one and I didn't like it. I was disappointed.
That's that cool factor. You know, they've always had that. And I remember, when the first iPhone came out, I at first, my first reaction was, oh, it's, you know, a $500 phone. Nobody's ever going to pay $500 for a phone. And here I am a $1,400 phone now. But once I got over that, once I realized that was, you know, actually fair given what it could do. Of course I wanted one. Of course I want. Google really pulled me in with their secondary services. Windows has always had a special place in my heart. I've always used Windows. It's very comfortable for me, very familiar to me. And so I guess I can't say that I'm only Windows for rational reasons. I'm only Android for rational reasons. I'm sure there's some, you know, emotional level to that. But I really struggle to find a rational reason to go with Apple. And that doesn't mean they don't exist. And that doesn't mean that for other people, the decision might be different. But for me, and I'm very certain for you, Adam, the answer is absolutely no.
Because I'm not looking for a needle in a haystack.
There you go.
So anyway, that's it for this show. And tune in for our next episode. And remember, you can find us on all your favorite podcast platforms, as well as online at unbiasedfanboys.com and on social media at the Fanboy Pod.
And feel free to let us know your thoughts about the topic or our podcast. We'd love to hear from you.
So drop us a message on social media or on our website. Don't forget to leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Have a good day.
Adios, amigos.